This is livemint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editor's Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story we discuss is the partnership between Toyota and Suzuki, and they're collaborating mainly for research and development, and also significant because India is the only country where Suzuki is dominating.
Yeah, I mean, Suzuki may be a Japanese company, yeah. But in many ways, I think it's an Indian company, right?
Yeah.
Maruti Suzuki accounts for the bulk of Suzuki's profits. And it's probably the only market in the world where they're market leaders. They're not even market leaders in Japan,
right?
I mean, they're fairly minor player in the Japanese auto market. I think it's an interesting partnership from several perspectives. Suzuki is a small company, doesn't have enough wherewithal to invest a lot of money in research and development. The auto industry is getting significantly disrupted by technology. We like to think only in terms of autonomous cars, right? But leave aside autonomous cars or self-driving cars. You have electric vehicles.
Right.
You have hybrid engines. You could have hydrogen engines at some point in time. I mean, it's just amazing the way in which technology has taken over the auto industry. And I don't think any company can afford to ignore this aspect of the auto industry. This partnership that Suzuki has struck with Toyota is an indication that the Japanese company is trying to find a partner which is probably better in research than it is, which probably has more money than it does in research.
Right.
It'll also be interesting to see how the partnership evolves in India. Because in India, Toyota is a minor player. Not a very minor player, but a minor player. They have good products, but they have an insignificant presence in the small car market. I don't even know whether their small car is still available. It may be, it may not be. I don't know, right?
Yeah.
It's not exactly a small car that set the street on fire, right? The Etios Liva, I think that was what their small car was called. The interesting thing about this partnership as from the Indian perspective is that Suzuki is the market leader, and it remains to be seen whether it will actually help Toyota in some way get some kind of toehold in the small car market.
Right.
What makes the partnership even more interesting or even more difficult, depending on how you look at it, is the fact that Toyota now owns Daihatsu. And Daihatsu is a significant player in the small car market and in the compact car market, and it has actually been giving significant competition to Suzuki in Japan as well as several other Asian markets. So all in all, lots of wheels within wheels. But it is an interesting partnership. It probably, if there were one or two takeaways I have to take from this partnership, the first one is that no auto company can afford to ignore technology. And the second one is, in India, you have to somehow crack the small car market if you want to become a market player with any decent kind of market share.
Right. We're moving on. The next story is about the Nobel Prize for Economics, and it's been awarded to two economists for their work in the contract theory. And so why do you think this is significant?
I think it's significant because all business is run by contracts.
Right.
And not just all business, but all manager behavior is also driven by contracts.
Mm.
Now, typically in contracts, you have an agent who executes the contracts. You have the principal who benefits from contracts. The principal is like a shareholder. The agent is like a manager. And one would expect that the interests align. But sometimes the interests may not align. And if you look at what happened in 2008, the financial crisis, I think it didn't align because at that point in time, the agents were more focused on their gains rather than on the overall gains because the two were contradictory. So they were looking at their own bonuses rather than looking at returns for their investors.
Okay.
The same way, if you look at recent incidents concerning, let's say, Deutsche Bank, which has got fined again for some securities trades, you will find that the motives are similar. So contract theory pretty much guides a lot of this. And what it helps people do is to write better contracts. Because if you write better contracts, you can actually align behavior to business objectives. And in the case of most business, the objectives are shareholder benefit. I think I've simplified it to a great extent. It's far more complex than this. But it's a mix of economics and human psychology and law and a little bit of game theory, which goes into contract theory. And it's a fascinating discipline. So as a business newsroom, I think we are thrilled that it's gone to the economists who did some seminal work in contract theory.
Right.
But then if you look at a lot of the awards that have been awarded over the last two decades, it's increasingly been to very utilitarian things like game theory and contract theory and behavioral economics and things like that, which actually regulate how individuals behave, how managers behave, how markets behave, how companies behave.
Right.
Macroeconomics is there, but I don't think you've seen too many awards go there.
Mm. Also, I think these are the areas where sort of crises emerge.
That's right.
So,
I mean, like for instance, contract theory also rules over CEO pay, which is one of these touchy topics for shareholders and shareholder advisories and proxy advisories, right? So it is one of those areas where contract, which is improperly written, could well cause the wrong sort of behavior among CEOs.
Right. So moving to a completely different topic, we have a story from the tech sector. And it doesn't seem to be doing too well with two stories on Infosys, which had just slashed its revenue guidance. And TCS earlier in the week announced its results and they've done pretty badly.
Yeah, in fact, Infosys, its results just came out a few hours ago. Looked at them too closely. But one thing that really stands out is the fact that two of the three software companies, Indian software companies, that pretty much stand for everything, which is Infosys, Wipro, and TCS, two out of the three have actually given guidances for a single-digit growth this financial year. And it's probably the first time since these companies began declaring their results that this has happened. I think it's one of those milestone moments. Why is this happening? For the simple reason that I think the IT industry is changing in two ways. The first way is a very mundane thing. Demand is there, but it's not as high as it was once there. Clients are driving harder bargains. Business is hard to come by. And the second aspect, which is more interesting, is that I think the business has changed. People are looking for companies that can help them tackle disruptive digital technologies and transform their business. To what extent have Indian companies equipped themselves to do that? We don't know. Sure, all of them have their own artificial intelligence platforms. All of them have their cloud consulting services. Everyone claims to be doing cutting-edge work. The fact is, I don't think they are. They're doing it to some extent, but they're not doing it to the extent that they should be doing.
Right.
Which also explains the reason why they've been acquiring a lot of small startups and trying to integrate their offerings into their own offerings. So it's a race to transform themselves. And until they do that, they will face this problem of revenues not continuing to grow as fast as they were once growing. And I want to repeat it because I think it's staggering. For the first time since they began, two out of the three firms, and given the way Wipro has been doing, right, I don't mean to be unkind, but this company hasn't exactly covered itself in glory over the last 2 years. So it could well turn out, if Wipro does the same thing, you will have all three companies, which pretty much stand for Indian IT, which represent Indian IT, giving a guidance for single-digit growth this financial year, which has never happened in the history of Indian IT.
Right. And we also have HCL Tech coming out with its results, I think, next week. So we'll have to see.
We'll also have to look at Cognizant. We'll have to look at HCL Tech. We'll have to look at Tech Mahindra and all these things. But truth be told, I've personally, as an IT reporter and also as someone who looked at the numbers, always found HCL's numbers a little too opaque. Right. So I don't understand what's happening in that company. So I don't want to comment on that.
Right. So we end with the last story, which is on Bob Dylan, who's just won the Nobel Prize for Literature. And of course, he's a great American songwriter who sort of infused poetry into his songs, as the Academy said. But it has also sort of triggered a debate saying that is Dylan really literature?
I think it's a popular choice. As someone was telling me yesterday, for the first time in many years, you can actually, you know, look at someone who's won the Nobel Prize for Literature and say, I know this guy, right? Usually the reaction is, who? Some of his songs are extremely well written. They have deep import. We are speaking of a songwriter and an artist who's been influenced by people like Allen Ginsberg and Charles Baudelaire. And I mean, all extremely good poets. Pretty much, what can I say? He was the voice, his song was the voice of the revolution, the right. anti-Vietnam War protests. I think sometimes academies, such as the Nobel Academy, gives out prizes, and other people who give out prizes, give prizes to people because of what it says about them too, mm-hmm. right? It is a cool choice.
Right.
It is an unconventional choice, but it is a popular choice. Dylan pretty much considers himself a writer, right? And he's an artist,
right.
but a writer. You know, the simple way to look at it is, if you walk down the pavement of Connaught Place, and there used to be a time when I was in college, I don't know whether it's still there, all these guys were selling books on the roadside. Mm-hmm. You'll find books of Dylan lyrics, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's lyric. You have pirated copies of Dylan's lyrics books, which are doing, which used to do the rounds. I don't think they do the rounds anymore. So those books were published. They did well. Everyone has a copy. I mean, I have a copy somewhere. And they're good songs. It is good poetry.
Yes.
And a lot of other artists also feel the same, because many of them have covered his songs.
Mm.
In fact, I personally feel that while the songs are extremely good from the perspective of their lyrical quality, the performance of other artists who cover them is actually a lot better than what Dylan himself does. But be that as it may, right? I mean, there may be people who feel differently.
Right.
So I think it's a popular choice. See, the Nobel Prize misses a lot of people, right?
Well, like, for instance,
they missed Gandhi, for instance. And of course, then it was too late, because it's a prize that's only given to living people. It's not given posthumously.
Right.
And they might have thought that Gandhi would live for a few more years, and then Indian independence happens, and then a couple of years later you give it to him. Maybe that's what they wanted to do. De Beers was a man who should have won the Peace Prize. Never won it. They never gave it to him. So I think it's good that they gave it to Dylan, because there had been a lot of people who'd been clamoring for this.
Right.
I don't think anyone will argue with it. Most people are happy about it. I saw Rushdie tweeting fairly positive things about it, and he doesn't mince his words usually. So,
yeah.
So I think he is a popular choice.
Great. So we'll end there. Thank you. So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at Livemint on Twitter or Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday. Just like a rose.